Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, you still have it. Yes. See, you are such a tricky person, okay? Because you're such an old man texter. You're all business. Anytime I try to do something funny or just like talk a little shit where I want to like razz you a little, you go silent and I never hear anything. What? You send me a video of a Goops video the other day. And you're rocking these great red wristbands.
Yeah.
And I know the kind of guitar player you were about your guitars and your wrists. I already know it.
And, it was for sweat, dude. I wore huge
and I say, oh, do you still have the red wristband, bro? You know, trying to get into it. No answer. No answer, Brad. You're all business. And then you text me, you're like, are we ready to go at 6? Something like that. Oh, mean. Come on, Brad. I want to have some fun here, man.
I was keeping it. I wanted to surprise you.
All right. That was a pretty good surprise. Even though I thought that was Oscar's hand.
I know the hand looks weird. I think it's the angle.
That looks like a tiny little Donald Trump. You know hand, what? Brad. Like, you got to post this video onto Patreon so people know what I'm looking at.
You know
at
what
right
it
now.
Is? This wristband is so old that it's like big and floppy and loose. Like even... I'm looking at my arm now and it looks like my hand is small.
Brad, I'm staring at this hand and there's just no conceivable way that's an adult's hand I'm looking at.
We try another wristband. Is my phone.
Oh, I'm getting more?
Yeah, I gotta.
I love that I got the devil horns too.
I think it's because that red wristband is really, it's so old, it's like floppy now. It's like old.
All right, that looks a little more normal.
I'd see the angle too is better.
It's a little more normal.
That was the wristband that started it all.
It still doesn't look like a normal hand to me. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I was watching Lord of the Rings clips on YouTube the other day. It looks a little like Gollum's. I'm just not sure what's happening now. You have to post these on Patreon.
Because
I feel like I'm crazy.
So that red, white, and blue one, which is the classic Sid Vicious or somebody used to wear that. I gave one of those to Lint on our first tour, and then he went on to wear it. Like, and I saw every picture and video after that I saw him with it.
Well, one of the red, white, and blue ones?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so you're partially responsible for Lint style?
Lint, not for fucking Tim from Rancid.
Oh, I thought you meant that band Lit, like
Tim Armstrong.
That's their song, right? Yeah, that's a lot cooler, Tim Armstrong. I thought you were feeding the style of early 2000s alternative.
Anyway, yeah, I'm partly responsible for punk rock fashion of the 90s.
I believe it.
Underground.
I believe it. Brad,
keeping
you're a taste maker.
Keeping it on the DL.
You're a taste maker. Well, that was nice to have Andrew come on from Comeback Kids, Sights and Sounds.
Another nice Canadian guy who fucking rocks hard.
Yes, but different kind of Canadian. We brought it up in the in the intro. Winnipeg's a very different place than Toronto, and it breeds a very different person.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Toronto's like... You know,
Toronto's like fucking Europe, dude.
Yeah, it's like, and it's like kind of foofy in a way. It's awesome. It's a great town. But for someone from Winnipeg, that's like, it's like the way like someone from like Detroit would look at New York City, you know? It's a totally different story in the middle of that country. It really is. You would not.
I don't think it's a very big city either, is it? I mean, I've never been there, but
no, it's not. It's not a very big city. I mean, it's big for that part of Canada,
right?
But yeah, no, it's not a very big city. It's a cool city. I've been there a bunch of times, but you know, it is. You can see like there's a tangible grit to that town. You know, like it's a gritty town. You feel it when you first come
frontier,
in.
Baby, frontier.
That's it. Yeah, that is straight frontier land.
Yeah.
And I even, you know, I didn't bring it up. You know, I'm a history nerd. So I did a little research on the history of Winnipeg. And, you know, there was this like very fertile area there. And of course, the governors of like Minnesota and Michigan and some other places in the late 1800s tried to take it over.
Yeah.
And make it America, essentially.
Right.
And they resisted and finally turned it into Manitoba. But anyway, that's boring. I have a confession, Brad. I have a confession to
I
tell
do.
You.
I like how you do get some history lessons on this show, though, Benny. So I don't think you should call it boring and apologize.
Oh, I won't stop. Okay. You'll never stop me from being a nerd. Right. But speaking of being a nerd, I was starting the research for this interview, and one of the first things I did was stumble upon the Wake the Dead video. That I haven't seen in years. Actually, I haven't seen it much. Like, I mostly just listened to that song. I didn't really watch the video.
Wait, is that the one with Frankenstein mask?
No, it's pretty much like a live video, like of a concert when the guys, they're all really young, you know, like baby faced.
Right.
It's really cool. And I don't know what happened, man, but I'm about to hit like the second chorus. I started crying.
Mm-hmm.
I really did. I had this like super visceral response to, I think it was just a mixture of the song always does something for me anyway. It's one of those songs that like 75% of the time I hear it, it still gives me like the arm tingles,
right,
you know,
right.
It makes me feel something in the chorus. It makes me think of something. And I'm watching this video and I don't know if it was like nostalgia for, you know, being a kid myself at a hardcore show and singing along, if it was the song itself, if it was like me longing for, you know, that live music experience right now or something. But, you know, I haven't really like emotionally taken in much of this COVID stuff in response to music. You know, I've kind of just been reacting and surviving however I have to, but it definitely made me reflect. I'm like, wow, like, this is very impactful for me right now. And like, what is it doing? You know,
that's intense. That's cool.
Yeah. What do you think?
I have the same thing happen to me. There's dozens of songs that like, that'll do that to me. Yeah. And a lot of them, it's you know, it's because they hark back to like a moment in time that they've just like affected me. And a lot of silly punk rock songs even will do that.
Maybe he was seeing too. It was like the funny thing about that video is Comeback Kid was so young at the time that the crowd in the video is not exactly like a gristled hardcore crowd. You know, it's like kids their age.
Right.
And some of them look kind of awkward.
Right.
Like they're at their first show or like singing along and maybe not knowing every word and stuff like that. And I think that even rang with me because it's like, nice. I wasn't some like super cool, like 15-year-old at these shows. I was fucking weird and awkward. And these weird songs made me feel good. And all these other weird people made me feel good.
Right.
So yeah, I'm not exactly sure what it harkened back to, but I gotta be honest. I had this really like just emotional reaction to hearing that song for the first time. And I had a pretty good cry, but it was one of those ones where you're like 10 seconds into it and you're like, why the fuck am I crying? You know, it's like, like kind of those quick, like, wait, there's something else at work here. Are you okay? Like, I just started talking to myself. I'm like, wait a minute. You're not supposed to be crying in a comeback video. You might not be all right right now. You know,
it's okay, man. It's different times, different times.
What is a song that gives you, like, what's a song that you could go to get that response anytime you want?
What I thought of, like, would do a similar kind of thing with me is Sync with California by Youth Brigade. because I listened to that a lot when I was really young, and it was, you know, with broing down with the boys, man, singing along. And I know there's something about that melody. I just love that song. It's a great anthem. It's a classic punk rock anthem.
See, and of course, when you say that, I imagine a 14-year-old version of you basically in like the middle of a cornfield with like a cassette player, like under a starry sky, just like, this will be my future. My biggest connection to Youth Brigade was when I first went to LA, one of the guys from that band was my weed connection.
Oh no, really?
Oh, shit. Because I wasn't a California resident. I couldn't just walk into a shop, you know?
Yeah, so yeah.
I was still in the black market.
Whatever it takes.
And you know what's funny? All right, I'll tell a quick story about this because it's a good lesson for life, okay? This story. It was like my first night in California on this one trip. I don't want to get into specifics because I don't want to say any names, but I'm going to this guy's apartment complex in LA, you know, to meet up and get some stuff. And I'm driving the van, the big 15-passenger, which is not in my name in any capacity. The registration's not my name. Insurance isn't my name. And I'm going around a corner and I fucking bump a car. Just a car that was sitting there. And I messed it up pretty good. Like,
what neighborhood is this in California? Do you remember?
It was in LA. I don't remember what neighborhood we were in, but just kind of your normal run of the mill, like white two-story, you know, apartment complex in LA.
Got it.
And I'm going around one of these, you know, there are all these miniature fucking parking lots, and I clipped the car and I took a light out on the car, and, you know, I end up parking, I walk by it. Again, I'm not going to name names, but some of the people I'm with and some of the people I was meeting were like, you know, fuck it. Come on, like get in the apartment. And I'm about to go in. I'm like, nah, like I can't do it. I'm like, I can't do it. I can't live with these scruples. Like, it's just too fucked up.
Right.
I'm like, I did it. I got to take the heat for it. And I went out and I started, you know, like composing a note for the car. And a woman walks out. She's like, you know, can I help you? Why are you like molesting my fucking car? And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm like, that's my van. This is what happened. I'm like, I'm not from here, but yeah, I'll do whatever, make it right. Like whatever we got to do, you know? And she takes a look at it and she goes, she's like, you know, my boyfriend's pretty good with that stuff. Don't even worry about it. I'm like, for real? She's like, for real. And I always felt like that was a little bit of a, you know, one of those graces of humanity where like, it does pay to do the right thing.
Oh
every
yeah.
Once in a while.
Sometimes,
you know,
it really does. Yeah. Yeah, she saw that you were doing the right thing. She let you off the hook, dude.
She had empathy. She's like, you know, he didn't mean it. And if, you know, what if I bailed on it and she took to security footage or something like that, you know?
That wouldn't be a good deal.
It's always a better way. None of this has anything to do with Comeback Kid, I'm afraid. or Andrew,
but
or Canada,
I feel
or
like
this great interview.
I feel like Andrew, he would do the right thing. He's that kind of guy.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he'd begrudgingly take the hit. Yeah. But anyway, this was a fun interview and a lengthy one. Maybe we should get in.
Let's do it. It's going on.
I truly believe that there is like a blues record in my future. I'm talking like, yeah, like I'm going to, from, you know, 10 to 11 every night, like drink a handle of Early Times and write a very sexual blues song.
You need to get a dobro. You need to like, that needs to be your instrument other than drums.
You know, I just watched that Belushi documentary and they were talking about when he did the Blues Brothers. And he wasn't even like really, I guess he, you know, that was his big dream. Like that was kind of what gave him the most like pleasure and passion, I guess. But
oh,
yeah,
what, being a musician?
No, being a blues musician.
Right.
Is the Blues Brothers okay? I watched it like last year and I didn't remember getting like the kind of uncomfortable tingles I got watching it than I did this time. Like, is
I think
it
I'm more I think I'm more into Oh, it's okay. I think I'm more into learning about Belushi's life than his actual films.
Yeah. There's just something inherently maybe about, like, I don't know. Is that just like the model of appropriation? Like, was that the end of white people stealing the blues? Was the Blues Brothers like it started in the early 60s and that was the culmination of, like, oh, okay, the Blues Brothers are two white guys. I see.
No doubt.
Might have been the end of it. What's going on, Andrew? How are you?
Chilling, man. I just flew back home from Winnipeg. I live in Toronto.
Yeah.
And I know, I was catching up actually on my flight yesterday, so I know what I was getting into with this. So I listened to Vogel's interview and Chris Cresswell's. So now I know like what not to double up on.
You did a little legwork. Okay, that's good actually, because now you know what not to cover about Toronto.
Yeah, I know that, you know, when we are about 220 pounds, I'm not sure if we should be stage diving or not. That's what I was informed about.
I mean, all right, like, let's get right into it. It's fresh on your mind, because I had a stage diving question for you anyway. So,
oh, perfect.
So this is from, that was from the Scott Vogel episode, right?
Yeah, but you touched on it on Cresswell's as well.
Yeah, so I mean, I see that actually rung a chord with you. Like, I'm sure you've seen a lot of motherfuckers stage dive at your shows. Like, what do you think it is? What do you think's the cutoff?
It's all technique.
I see.
That's it. Yeah. You know? But like I was going to say, you know, you were quick to say that you were too heavy to stage dive. You thought, and I think you and I are about the same size, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
So, you know, and then I was thinking about the times when I would, you know, I'm getting, you know, a little cocky on stage and I'm like, okay, it's time for a dive to you know, send this one to the top.
Yeah.
But I'm maybe to others' detriment. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're right. It is. I mean, it's such technique. I mean, it's those people who just flop their giant bodies onto the first row, you know, giving someone like a knee to the head, or, you know, the people who are stage appropriate. You see a big crowd, you get up and you got to get lift. Maybe that's what it's all about, right? Is it all about just how many inches you're getting off the ground? It's all about vertical.
I think as long as it's just a sea of people, it's just awkward when, like, you're in Germany and the guy's like on stage, like calling everyone, like,
oh my
his
God,
hands
that's
to
the
come
worst
up.
Thing ever.
It's like, come on, guys, come on, come on. And then maybe you get, actually, that's the first, when I first met Comeback Kids guitar player Jeremy, the guy that started the band with me.
Yeah.
We met when I was like, I was telling my mom about this because I was in my hometown. But first time I met him, there was maybe five people body surfing me. I was maybe like 12 or 13 years old, and Jeremy was the one holding my legs. He was a little bit older than me, and then I fell and broke my wrist.
Oh shit.
So that was like one of my first shows for sure. So I you know, Jeremy, you know, and I met through you know, body surfing.
I mean, and he very literally, the first time he met you, let you down.
Yeah, he sure did. He was the only one holding me up, just like today, you know? He's my guy.
It's such a metaphor for the future. So you guys met back in Winnipeg when you were much younger?
Yeah. Yeah, some local festival outside of town. So, yeah, he was one of the first people I met, and, you know, we weren't really tight friends, but then through heart, you know, being in the scene and stuff, we started Figure Four,
right,
an old band, and then he joined that later, and then we started Comeback Kids shortly after. So
that's awesome. Was this crowd surfing event at one of the famous Royal Albert shows?
No, it was an outdoor festival.
Oh, okay.
I think I landed on hay, but still broke my wrist. So.
Very well done. So, all right. So let's get this out of the way now then, because this was part of my questioning. What is your personal best stage dive in history? And what's the best stage dive you've ever seen? Like, does anything stand out in your mind?
Like the best one that I've ever done?
Yeah.
I've never really had good ones that for like bands other than my own. I don't think.
Oh, okay.
I'm not really skilled like that. I'm pretty awkward. But like I said, you know, like if it's a really, really packed show and then I start feeling it, maybe I'll be able to like let myself go as the singer. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
As a fan, it would have been so long ago.
Yeah.
And it would have been probably pretty bad.
Is a head walk appropriate?
at one time, I mean, hey, if your feet are light enough, I'm not gonna say, you know, it's wrong. Maybe, yeah, it's technique, I guess. I've seen people go and then no one's upset about it. So, you know,
I know.
But that's the thing I'm telling, like, are we ever going to have that again? You know, are these conversations, yeah. You know, it's a thing of the past maybe. So
I think we'll figure out a way to responsibly head walk again.
Let's you know? Hope so.
Like these are Let's the things so. That people are really trying to get with their lives.
If you're 6 feet tall, you can head walk, right?
I don't,
6 feet, 6 feet of distance. Come on.
Oh, I see. I guess. Yeah. Your mouth is 6 feet away from other people's mouths. Right. If you're fully extended, it's very smart, Brad. Good for you.
You were talking about, you know, in previous episodes, like watching old DVDs and stuff like that, or sorry, old VHSs of shows. And I remember, like, yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen those old, like, CBGBs shows from, like, you know, even like the late 90s, like
sure.
in the like 25 to Life era, or like, you know, bands. Like,
yeah.
And just like the dancing and walking is awesome. You know,
it was,
people have tech, they could walk over like a thin row of one row of people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, with style. They didn't need much real estate to get going.
Exactly.
I remember the terror I had at the first time I went to like a proper, like big hardcore show around here. And it was cause, you know, I was like maybe 14 or 15, but I was allowed to take the train to Philly because my sister was going to college there. And she went to a sorority, not exactly a hardcore girl. But part of the rules about me being able to go down there was that she had to chaperone me to a show. So her and her sorority friend chaperoned me and another 14 or 15 year old to the University of the Arts to see Cro-Mags, Snapcase, I think it might have been an early like H2O show, a band called X Cannon X. And strangely, I was there to see a Jersey like pop punk band called Doc Hopper. And I was like sort of interested in the other bands. And Cro-Mags ended up canceling. I don't know. I don't know for whatever reason. And Snapcase picked up the torch and played a few Cro-Mags songs. And I remember just the second they started the feedback for something like Off Age of Quarrel, the place just exploded in a way where like I had only gone to local hardcore shows before that. And I saw that and it was like absolute terror. There was just 1 hour of me just glued against the wall, just watching these like grown ass animals just thrash each other and do walls of death and all these things. But the funniest part about it was watching my sister afterwards being like, what the fuck was that?
When you're first exposed to it, there's nothing like it, really.
No.
I think just like kind of, you know, transitioning into live music again, it's just going to, again, that was a very romantic time, those 20 years that we had or whatever of pits, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I think that we'll see how, you know, bands like, you know, heavier bands kind of notice it the most because a lot of the show is about the crowd going off, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
So we'll see. We'll now, see what happens.
For you back in the day, like, you know, you've been at this hardcore thing for a long time. Like that moment I had in Philly, do you have a clear like moment when you first, you know, had that sheer terror and excitement of a hardcore show and kind of got sold on the whole thing?
I don't think it was terror rather than excitement. Going to see, I think, you know, I grew up in Winnipeg, which is a small city in the middle of Canada. The closest big city would have been like Minneapolis.
Oh, okay.
So when I was like later on in high school, able to drive down to the States, and I would, you know, I think I saw Harvest's last show.
Oh, nice.
That was the first time, you know, Bane was new out, Walls of Jericho, Nora, like that kind of like Trustkill,
sure.
You know, beginning of the Trustkill era. And going down there and be like, okay, you know, American kids like moshing and like, there was a festival, a couple of festivals that they did down there. But yeah, no, it was just, I mean, I'd never seen, wow, like such style with slam dancing before, you know, as a teenager. So it was all very cool to me.
And what was going on in Winnipeg at the time? I mean, was it like all propaganda?
propaganda, and then like bargain bin versions of that, of the stylish dancing, some track suits, and you know.
yeah. So what was the was there like not a hardcore scene in Winnipeg at the time?
No, there was. And I was lucky to have, our version of CBGBs. Did you say the Albert before?
Yeah. I was wondering what your memory from the Royal Albert was. Do you want to explain to people what that joint was about?
Yeah, that was, Winnipeg's pretty much CBGBs. And in the way that where, you know, when I was a teenager, we had, all ages Sunday matinees happening punk bands, hardcore bands, oi bands, you know, so that was kind of a cool way to get exposed to not only like punk and hardcore, but just other facets of that. And, you know, there would be like a street punk band playing with a metalcore band or a hardcore band. So, you know, lots of different types of people coming out. And that's what kind of made it cool, because we weren't really having as many touring bands come through at that time. And like right. you, I was impressed to hear that you like put on shows when you were like 15, 16, because I definitely did that. And just like I said, I was just in my hometown. I was just kind of thinking about that.
Awesome.
How old I was, you know, being like literally 15 years old promoting a show. Or I passed by an old like garbage hill, and I, you know, on my way to a rental car place, I was walking and saw this, you know, this hill where there was a festival. I think I saw Propaganda there for the first time, for my first time in about 95, 96. John K. Samson was still in the band. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool just to kind of think about that. I don't really think about that very, very often, you know, so.
Yeah. It's fun to get back to that place. And what was the connecting factor to you? Like, how did you go from, normal kid to someone into punk and hardcore? Like, what led you down that path?
My older brother, got me into, his friend came over and sold me a I Spy Propaganda Split CD.
Oh yeah. I remember that.
And I grew up, like in a church family as well. So I was into that, up until, you know, when I was a teenager. But
yeah,
Propaganda was, you know, I was into some of that Christian punk and metal and hardcore stuff in my teenage years. And Propaganda kind of opened my mind to, like, you know, human rights issues at an early age, and kind of gave me, like, that was really a good way to kind of be able to kind of like dig into like punk rock a little bit more, and just the values that it held. So I think I was lucky to be in Winnipeg and kind of realize some of that stuff early on. And then, you know, be able to form my own opinions on that. So
how is that with, you know, with your family? You said you grew up in a more of a church family, and both your brother and you at a pretty young age were starting to, you know, maybe not make a left turn from faith, but at least, you know, get into some more, you know, subversive activity, or what is deemed as subversive. How is that taken at home?
Yeah, I think it was just, you know, we were still doing positive stuff with our lives. And I think doing music for like someone from my family is, that's the dream, you know, we're all about music, and
nice,
happy to be able to be doing it in any capacity at this point. You know what I mean?
Were your parents musicians or interested in music?
Yeah, definitely. They do a bunch of music themselves. So
what kind of stuff?
They do like church music pretty much. And actually my oldest brother like leads a church band.
Oh, that's awesome.
So
some of those, you know, bands rip. That's some of the best drummers I've ever seen.
Dude, it was funny because I was staying at my mom's house the other day, and I was sleeping in the guest bedroom, my mom and dad's house. And they were like watching their church service online.
Yeah.
And there was one song that was going over and over, and I heard it in the other room, and I'm like, what is that song? It was a Duran Duran song, or, a Pink Floyd, is it Comfortably Numb?
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, so I, like, 2 hours later, I wake up and I say, hey, what is this song? And I played both these songs. Like, what is the song that's ripping off Duran Duran or Pink Floyd? I can't remember. But we couldn't figure it out. But, you know, it's some easy chords, some uplifting stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Some Still Waters Are Running Deep in that church band.
Yeah. Some nice, some easygoing strumming.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, you said that you started touring, you know, like right after high school, and never really had kind of a proper 9-to-5, right? You know, you ever wonder like, say if you kind of stayed in Winnipeg and never really started touring, you ever like kind of visualize what you could be right now?
Maybe, but yeah, I've been touring out of high school, but you know, I've always had these like little downtimes and to get different types of jobs. But very, very lucky to be doing music. I mean, again, just now we're, you know, we're Comeback Kid's working on a new record and it's just nice to be able to be doing this. I don't know what I'd be doing without it. Maybe real estate or something. Who knows? How can you ever know these things? Like, well, what would have I done? I spent $100,000 on school? Like,
yeah, it's a fool's errand to think it, but I still find it like, you ever on tour and you know, you're just driving in one of these towns, you know, that, you know, you've been driving 50 or 60 miles, you haven't seen anything. And then you just get to this town and there's, you know, maybe a block of 50 houses, a gas station, Hobby Lobby, you know, something like that. And then go another 50 miles and there's the next one. And I can't help but go through that exercise sometimes, you know, just like, what if I was born and raised in this town and like, you know, what would I be like? Am I the person I am because of the person I am? Or am I just like some culmination of my surroundings and experience, you know?
Definitely a little bit of surroundings, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of thinking about all that really right now as well, because, you know, we think about, being able to go on tour again after this is all done, but
sure.
Who knows, you know? So I'm definitely like thinking of other ways to survive, you know?
You said you're working on a new record, like in what capacity? Like, is it being influenced by the pandemic?
We're going to be recording in January, actually. So we'll have some new music within the next, you know, few months into, 2021, but no, it's about that time. And we have, we're able to do another record. So that's kind of the one thing keeping me going right now. I'm working in film a little bit, on my downtime, but yeah, that's just being, we just had our, you know, a couple sessions in Winnipeg and it's locked down in Winnipeg and now in Toronto as well, but we were able to meet up before it really, really shut. So we were able to like kind of isolate together and rehearse and stuff and jam. So we're pretty far along right now, actually.
Cool.
Is this material you guys were working on pre-pandemic and then had to circle back around to it, or this all happened in the last like 6 months or so?
Kind of. We've kind of started it right when the pandemic started. Okay. We knew that we were going to do a record somewhere around this time.
Sure.
We kind of thought that we'd be writing it in between tours and, you know, everything got either postponed or canceled. So,
yeah. So is the material with all this time, is it going to be better material or darker?
We have so many songs. We have more songs than we've ever had for a record. Right. It might turn into two releases. I'm not really quite sure.
Sweet.
It's funny because, you know, we're demoing as well more than ever before and doing that remotely and together. But just like, you know, hey, we have 17 songs or something, but how many of them are going to be good? <You know? laughs>
Right.
And that's also hard to tell before you mix it as well.
I know. So, it's okay.
Which ones do we want to send to this person to mix? Which ones to that guy?
Yeah. Right. I've been fooled so many times by a song. I'm like, yo, this is the one. This is the one. And then you get out of the studio. You're like, nope.
Right. Yeah. So you're not doing, you're not really interested in doing Gaslight anymore is what I kind of picked up from previous.
No. I mean, it's not really a lack of interest. It's like, it's actually a full interest when things look correct, you know, and when things feel right to do it. I think the thing we ran into is just like the classic, you know, are you going to keep saying something if you don't have much to say?
Copy that.
So it's just like, I don't know, man. Yeah. That's another podcast in itself. But it's not from a lack of interest, that's for sure. And you know, like you, once that if that vacuum of being in a room with people and writing music and getting songs together isn't happening, you know, I feel that deeply in my soul. So luckily, still got Mercy Union going on, We're putting the second record together, like pandemic style. But no, it's never a lack of like not wanting to do it. It's just not wanting to do things until they really feel right, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, that's cool. I love Mercy Union shit. That's awesome.
Thanks. I know we were almost going to do some shows together, right?
We were. Yeah.
Exactly, but, you know, so how's it going to work with the new, so last record came out in 2017, right? So
something like that. Yeah.
You'll be looking at 2021. I had read that now you have more songwriters in the band and you were getting like 10 demos a day.
Well, Stu, our guitar player, I don't know if you know him. He's a machine. He sent a lot of demos. So, you know, for me and Jeremy, who've been, you know, the predominant songwriters before, we kind of, I got to step up and get some of my songs on the record, you know?
Right.
That's a good kick in the ass.
Sure.
But yeah, between everything, we have a few like leftover, but we have a bunch of songs, so it's kind of wild. Like when there's so much material to kind of go through, it's just a lot. So that's kind of what we've done as a band, and I'm really stoked. I'm just home right now and just trying to write lyrics to it. Everything will probably be demoed like before, which is super. I mean, usually we get as much as we can done,
right?
And really rough. But I'm usually writing lyrics like right up until the point when I do them on the record.
Oh, really?
But this is going to be a bit different. And we've allowed, like, the whole band is kind of in on it. For example, the other night, I was doing vocals on a song that Jeremy had written, and just kind of working on the chorus, and it was going really well. But you know, I've been kind of pushing the guys, but hey, do you guys have any ideas? Let's like shoot out some other like chorus ideas,
right?
And other parts, and you know, even stuff that I can get a little married to, I was able to kind of let go and oh wow, actually that idea, Chase, hey, that you gave me that idea, that idea is better than mine. Oh, let's cool. use that. I just love it feels really good to be able to kind of like write together as a band, because I think we've not been able to always do that. It's been a couple of us kind of like steering the way.
So
it's just a little bit of a more like, hey, like, you know, just everyone's kind of contributing. And I think it's really cool. So
is that a new thing for you? Like with being a little older and having the wisdom of kind of being able to get less married to parts and more open to suggestion?
Yeah, I think I need suggestion. I'm very much welcoming. I'm, hey guys, put your producer hats on for this one. I'm doing some demos and stuff. Let me know what you think. You know, I just kind of want to make it as good as possible. We're not really able to get the producer that we wanted to come up to Canada, you know, for when we record because the border's closed.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So, you know, all the help that I can get. We don't want too many cooks in the kitchen, but no one's like stepping over any boundaries or anything. So
I see. So the plan is to do everything up in Canada and then send out separately to be mixed to different people.
Yeah, probably. Depending on how much material there is. That's good.
Right. So, if you're going for the double album or not.
We'll see. You know, you want to time it up right for when the shows happen. So that
Don't do the double album, man. Not to release,
but I don't want to be like releasing music and then a year later we have to, you know, we start playing. It would be nice to kind of space it out. So
yeah,
you know, there's some stuff like, you know, in a few months and then maybe down the line a little bit more, and then, you know, it's time to tour. So hopefully we'll see.
Is the situation now gonna change your approach to, you know, how you would normally like roll it out? And are you going to put any extra onus on like, you know, the digital packaging and video and stuff rather than, you know, the hard production?
I think we're going to have to.
Yeah.
I was just thinking the other day about like live shows and what that might look like. You know, cause everyone's doing the live streams. Some people are doing more extravagant than others.
Yeah.
But you know, what if it's like, if it is less people in a room, what if it's, you know, bands staying and, you know, say we do a Canadian tour and we're in Toronto maybe three nights instead of one, and spaced out shows, maybe spend a little bit of extra money on the production of the show somehow. just kind of make it a little bit cooler.
Sure.
That's kind of where my head's at with that. Who knows? It would be nice to kind of have a plan and not be the followers on that one. But
yeah. And you said, so you have some access to sort of really professional video equipment, right? I saw that somebody in Sights and Sounds is a pro video person and you have access to it?
Yeah. I mean, we have friends here that work in film, so there's ways to, I guess, get stuff done. Hopefully, you know, it's funny. We've always kind of like done videos in Europe. I have friends in Europe that, you know, Germany that do some videos for Comeback Kid usually. So, you know, we'll have to kind of figure out how we're going to do it in Canada this time around.
Right.
It seems like we're stuck here.
Yeah, I think so. Well,
it seems like what's going on over there? You just kind of chilling? Yeah, not chilling, but things are, is it shut down there? Is it?
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's sort of, you know, especially in New York, New Jersey area, it's sort of gearing up towards kind of the, what it looked like again in like March and April with, you know, restrictions going up, but it's not quite as scary. Cause I think people have a little bit better of a sense of, you know, what's safe and what's possible, when you are being safe. So, yeah, but the idea that Americans are going to be able to freely travel anytime soon seems like a fool's errand.
You know?
I don't know if I'm coming to Canada anytime soon, unless Ian Perkins smuggles me up or something, you know?
Yeah, or you have to like quarantine for a couple weeks, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's still my plan, you know, is to go north if I have to. Will you take me in, Andrew?
I would. As long as Trudeau lets you in, you know?
I'll call him personally.
Yeah, or we can smuggle you up somehow.
So what's your story with writing? Are you kind of constantly writing, you know, not just lyrics, but just ideas and concepts? Or do you kind of wait till there's music and that's sort of the impetus to do it?
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of voice notes, and that'll be riffs and like vocal stuff.
Right.
You know, just, I like to write songs with a vocal idea in mind, but then, you know, I know that others in my band will write, you know, songs without a vocal idea. And that's kind of what, sometimes if I'm a little bit stuck on a riff that someone else is really jazzed on, like, so what would you sing over this? Like, that's, I like to like find out what, like, and that's kind of one thing I've been doing lately with this record is like asking my band members, like, so what do you hear here? Because, and before I even like kind of tell them my idea, it's nice to just have a few different options and see, because, you know, sometimes I found this so many times, like Jeremy had a song that we actually recorded for Die Knowing in 2014. And I never ended up singing on it. I just couldn't connect to it. I couldn't really. And then he somehow reworked it and brought it again this time. And actually just after just thinking about it more, I was able, now it's like a song that I'm pretty pumped on for this new record, but, it's just a lot of mush-mouthing into my phone, coming back to those ideas, and it's always, you know, a lot of times, you know, finding things that match with like my delivery or vowels, stuff like that.
Sure.
And you know, it's great when you can find the song sometimes shows you the direction that it wants to go. So,
yeah, actually I wanted to talk about that, 'cause I saw in another interview, you had said in reference to writing songs that sometimes are about depression or addiction or your own self-deprecation, that the songs kind of find you before you find them. I found that interesting. Could you elaborate like kind of what that means?
Totally. I think that you just kind of, I'll start a song with maybe a lyric or an idea that I go off of. And then just through that, when I'm writing thoughts down, it sometimes takes a different kind of shape or meaning. And yeah, I don't love writing lyrics, but a lot of times I'll find myself doing it kind of like chuckling to myself, you know, I literally have like 20 songs to write lyrics for right now. So I'm really an author here, just pacing around my house.
Yeah.
And smoking weed. I've been sober now for like 3 weeks. So this is like, I feel like that's kind of a superpower right now for me.
Okay.
I'm zeroing in on some of this stuff.
Zeroing in on like what you want to write about or your own kind of personal situation.
Zeroing on what I want to write up. I'm just into this record and I'm feeling really, really good. This quarantine's really, or this kind of time in life is definitely, I think it's helping me along in general. I can't really like articulate it very well, but it's just, it's helping me zero in on things that I really want to be doing, you know?
That's awesome. And what was the impetus to get sober a few weeks ago?
I've been trying to get sober. I try to get sober like, you know, all the time. Yeah. Well, I gotta, you know, maybe take a break here.
Yeah,
so
right.
Like a little break. So
is that part of like your songwriting process? Kind of like this sort of push and pull with your own like emotions and, you know,
definitely,
even addictions, I guess.
Definitely. What did I hear the other day that I wrote down? I liked what Chris, calling yourself on your own shit. Chris just said, when I was listening to your podcast. It resonated with me. Stu, again, you know, Stu had a song, our guitar player, Stu, that I was like, oh, whatever, you know, can you send me, he sent me a voice note, just with some, you know, vocal patterns and stuff. And it totally changed the song. I'm like, oh, great. Now I could see that this song could be really cool. Mm. And I used some of his ideas and he even just kind of wrote me a text about some of the stuff that he was feeling and some of that same kind of sentiment about what Chris was talking about, calling yourself on your own shit and like, just admitting some of the shitty behavior that you may have had. And I was able to turn something like that into a song and, cool. I don't know. It's a lot of the lyrics is definitely like internal stuff. You know, we, sometimes when I feel like I try to talk about world issues, it definitely dates it somehow.
And I don't
want to do that all the time. I don't want to, there's some demos already for this record that I'm already like, you know, I wrote that like 4 months ago and it's maybe I don't want to have that. It's already sounding dated.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 I mean, I remember growing up, like getting into punk and stuff and just being like, who the fuck is Margaret Thatcher? You know, I'm like, you know, and just these random like names. You're right. Like, I mean, it does. And there's not a lot of, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Just buzzwords, you know, of the time that are exciting to use, maybe in theory, but then, you know, if you think back and like, no, never mind.
Yeah, right. Now, I'm curious, like, you know, obviously Christianity, you know, you've stated pretty clearly that it was something you know, were caught up maybe when you were younger and more of a family thing and is sort of in your past. But how is your spiritual outlook these days? Do you use any parts of it that you grew up with to help guide you, or do you just kind of have a total rejection of the concepts?
No, it's just kind of like whatever for me. You know, it's just not part of my life anymore. It's funny because a lot of these kind of interviews or like conversations about my past or whatever that comes up, mm-hmm. because Figure Four, had like the Christian tinge to it. Like
right.
Kind of we were like Christian fucking hate breed or something like that.
There was a lot of Christian hate breeds at the time, man. You can give yourself,
dude, moshing for the Lord.
Yeah. So. I remember going to a Warp Tour at that time and being like, oh, I guess that's a thing. You know, I didn't even really know.
Yeah. Really? Yeah, totally. But yeah, no, I think when I, you know, was able to realize like, okay, this isn't real as a, like someone in, you know, 1920 or something, I had almost been looking for reasons, but you know, that it keeps you in with fear, you know,
right.
If you grow up with that stuff.
Sure.
You don't want to go to hell or whatever. But yeah, so I'm free from that. And who knows, man? Yeah, I feel spiritually connected to the earth, but I don't know, you know?
Yeah. Did that take any like reconciliation with your family, or they just kind of, as long as you're being positive and good?
They support me for sure, but they want me to come back.
Yeah.
I'm the prodigal son.
So. Right. Well, at least, you know, I'm jealous of people like you too, though. 'Cause I'm like, you have that door waiting for you if you want it, you know, it's like right there. Like,
well, apparently if your name's written in the book of life once, then it's always there. So, you know, it's all good. It should be all good. Unless, you know, they're taking it back.
It's a mulligan. We're calling a mulligan.
I think it's so wild though. Like, just with the virus and stuff, how crazy and polarizing, I guess that is for that community now, and how it's separating people even more. I feel like, I don't know if it's in the States too, but even in Canada, like this, I think now that like conspiracy thing that was really, really ramping up in the States, maybe forever, but like what, 6 months ago, maybe more and more.
Yeah.
Is really affecting people in my auxiliary life.
Really?
In Canada over the last couple months more, like, or maybe I'm just hearing about family members or not close family members. I'm not trying to like put anyone on blast, but, you know, or just people that kind of in my world, like that are really buying into this, some of these like weird conspiracy theories, you know? So it's,
you heard any fun weird ones? Any fun ones recently?
Well, no, there's just, you know, there's these churches are just really trying to have church and these are the RCMP people are like telling them no, and they're like, we're still gonna do it, and it's just wild that it's just chill, you know.
I'm pretty sure the Supreme Court in New York just said that they are not allowed to prevent religious gatherings. Is that right, Brad?
Yeah, I think they're looking at it again, but it's been completely misrepresented, because they're essentially what they were trying to say was that, you know, the argument was like, oh, you're shutting down churches, but people can go to the liquor store. But the point is that people go into church and congregate together and sing, take their masks off. And it's, you know, you go to the liquor store with your mask and you run in and run out. And what the argument, which I think Cuomo made, which is a good argument, was, no, well, venues are completely shut down. Like the non-religious equivalent of church is shut down completely. Right. So essentially, like, you know, yeah, churches were actually still allowed to be open when like venues were not. So,
right.
So that was kind of the counter argument there. yeah, but I think they upheld it that he wasn't being unfair to churches.
People are fired up in Canada right now because we're all locked in right now.
Yeah.
Like it's not fully, but you know what I mean? It's just to the point where, you know, they just say like, don't go to other people's houses. You know, no restaurants are open or, you know, nothing like that. So we're entering winter here. So, you know, people are getting their opinions heard.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Canada's got its shit too. I mean, it's this funny thing you always hear with, you know, I hate hearing it honestly too. Like when you hear these Americans who are like, if it gets any worse, I'm going to Canada. I mean,
it's because Canada's numbers now are getting up to where America, like there's cities that are equivalent or kind of in the same range. That's why people are more concerned here.
Right. Yeah, well, my first instinct is always like, all right, you fucking sell out. You know, like this is your country. Why are you just going to leave that quick? You know? And then B, I'm like, they probably don't want you, especially at this point. And then C, I've traveled in Canada enough to know that, like, I don't know if it's the correct verbiage, but you all have rednecks too. You got plenty of them, you know, you start getting out into the middle of that country and, yeah, there's not a lot going on.
Alberta is the Texas of Canada.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but all Western Canada is pretty, you know. Yeah, I mean, all of Canada, mostly, except for Toronto, I guess.
Yeah, Vancouver. It's the same. It's like you guys are, it's coastal and it's cool. And then the cities are cool. And then everything in between, you know, it's
totally.
Yeah, What's that one? The Transcontinental Highway through Canada.
The Trans-Canada Highway.
Yeah.
The one highway back and forth.
Yeah, that thing has some creepy spots on it, man.
It really does. I've had some twists and turns on that one before. So.
I'm sure.
For sure.
All right. This is a good time to get into Mystery Friends.
Okay, no, hold on. I, you guys did it the other day, but I don't know if you did it on both episodes. Oh, I heard the Vogel one.
Yeah.
I can't remember the Chris one.
Chris Creswell, I got it, but it was so obvious because I got Paul Ramirez to do it. So he just nailed it in a second, you know?
Okay.
So this is an interesting mystery, Frank, because it's a particular story, but from the person who told it, it's sort of a story that apparently kind of represents your personality in a lot of ways.
Oh, perfect.
So you were in a van ride when you were a younger person, and apparently you were sleeping and woke up and your band members were pulling into a McDonald's and you yelled something at your band. Do you remember?
No.
You apparently yelled, "What is this? A band for 16-year-olds?"
Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently this has become a long running joke for many, many years now.
Oh, for sure.
Of any time you pull off for fast food that you get made fun of for saying, "What is this, a band for 16-year-olds?
What is this, a band for 16-year-olds?" Yeah, well, I was on tour with Sights and Sounds. We're in Europe or something. And just, I don't, maybe it wasn't Europe. Maybe it was Canada, but they kept on stopping at, you know, McDonald's or the fast food places. And what I meant was, you know, we're not 16-year-olds, you know, we can't be eating fast food every day. We need like something good.
Right.
So like, what is this, a band for 16-year-olds? I don't know. But I thought that would only be like really inner circle that would know that.
Yeah. Listen, I did some digging. Okay. And then I heard another one. We don't have to get too deep on it because of the context. But apparently every once in a while, someone will yell at you too. Hey, no excuses, buddy. No excuses because of a song one of your old bands had.
Yeah, we don't have to bring that
up. Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. I know the context and I already told your friend. I'm like, you know what? That topic, no good for podcasts. No fun.
Yeah, so you know, hey, that's one thing that I left behind at 16 years old. Yeah, you know,
yeah. but the thing your friend was telling me was that this is kind of encompasses a personality and something that you already said about yourself, which is maybe, you know, maybe don't suffer fools lightly, but also can joke on yourself and can like not take yourself so seriously.
Okay. Yeah, no, this is one thing I was going to tell you.
Okay.
Since we're not taking, I'm a fucking loser with this, but I landed yesterday in Toronto. I was listening to the podcast, your podcast with Chris, and I had just missed my train into the city. Oh, so, okay, I'm going to go down into, we can fly with weed in Canada now.
Oh,
So I went down to the, like the garage or whatever that was kind of open and rolled a joint, start smoking it. And then I went back and then I realized like, oh shit, you know, I was kind of getting into the podcast, whatever, kind of just looking around, making sure no one was catching me. Like, or I don't think I was supposed to smoke where I was.
Right.
But my mom had given me this bag of like farmer sausage that you can only get in Manitoba.
Okay.
And I was really stoked on it. And actually last time she gave it to me, I'd left it on the plane on the way back, but this time I had it. But then when I realized, oh shit, I got to get back for the next train, I left and I'm thinking to myself, oh, I feel a little bit lighter right now.
Oh no.
And I left because of your podcast. I left the sausage in the parking lot. I think I even stupidly, like, I don't know. I was like, I sent like an inquiry for the lost and found. to see if like, oh, like just a bag full of like meat, like rare meat or something. Was I really going to go back to the airport to get it? But I have this weird OCD thing when I lose things and I was just like trying to retrace my steps. But the classic me, you know what I mean?
So it's two times in a row you haven't. What is farmer's sausage?
It's like, it's a Mennonite sausage thing. Like it's a family, I don't know. It's kind of like, maybe it's like pre-cured, I guess, or whatever, but you just put it in the oven for an hour. My brother just moved in with me and he got this air fryer. So I was all stoked to use it. And I told him like, hey, if mom asks, tell her the farmer sausage was really good.
Oh no.
So she also lurks my Instagram. So hopefully she won't like see this if I post it.
All right, Brad, don't use this as the video. All right.
Come on. It's so good. Lost sausage.
Lost sausage. Excuse me. And airport security. Have you seen my bag of meat?
YYZ has not gotten back to me about the, you know, the lost sausage, the rare sausage, quote unquote. Oh,
I feel bad. I feel bad that I'm the impetus for you losing your farmer's sausage.
It's my own fault. It's my own fault. I must have had it like against the wall or something. And I just, you know, I needed to get home. So
what's the OCD about lost things? It's like, can you not get it back with it feeling good? Like it's been in someone else's hands?
If I can just know that something's gone, then I can accept it. Like if I lose something, it's gone. Oh, but if there's a chance to kind of get it back,
yeah,
it's relentless.
Sure, so. Sure.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, any idea who told me this story about what is this? A band for 16-year-olds?
One of the Flatliners guys?
It wasn't. I intentionally was like, you know what? I just interviewed Chris. I use Paul as my mystery friend. I can't play out the flats right now.
Who else do you know? I mean, oh, Tanner?
No. I love this because like, I went deep into your world, buddy.
Because I was trying to, I was trying to think about the times we hung out.
Yeah.
I'm just coming back mostly to like Germany or something like that.
Yeah.
But
all right. So you want me to give
it
up?
I have no idea. Yeah.
The proprietor of your favorite bar in Toronto, Sneaky D's, George DiMenturo.
Oh, perfect.
I know. George. I got him. So this is how I got him, though. I text Ian Perkins.
Okay.
And I say, Ian, do you or Angela know Andrew well enough to give me a silly story? Ian's like, bruv, I'm not sure. You know, we hang out, but I don't know. Like, and he didn't have anything off the hand. And he's like, I know who to call. And he connected me and George, and we texted. We spoke on the phone for a minute, and he gave me this funny story about you.
Oh, these are deep cuts right here.
Yeah, I went in on you, man. Listen,
yeah,
I know I've said this to you in person before. Comeback Kid's a very important band to me, and this was a very important interview for me to get. So if anything I could do, I wanted to come through on the mystery friend, you know?
Well, I'm pumped to be here. Yeah, George. You know what's funny too? I wonder if you'd, you know, if he said like one time I was going up to him, because a lot of my friends have worked at Sneaky D's.
Right.
It's a staple. And one time I was at Hard Luck, his other bar, just drinking, whatever. He's like, George, I'll never work for you. I don't work for you. Or something like that. Literally like 2 months later, I started doing sound at like their karaoke night or something.
Yeah, so I
was working for him. Everyone, you know, he's the boss. He's the man.
He said you had a pretty funny relationship like that. Something about bar stools too, with him kicking you out of the bar for pulling bar stools or something.
No, he's thinking of someone else, maybe.
Not you.
No, couldn't be. Couldn't be.
Awesome. And this,
it's actually his birthday coming up, I think.
Now everybody should check out in Toronto Sneaky D's if you're there.
They're still standing. There was some risk of them losing their spot because of, you know, an investor was going to buy the property or whatever, but it seems like they're sticking around. So that's good. I mean, they can only do carry out now. So,
oh, really? It's a bummer, man. When you're growing up in Winnipeg, what's the idea of people from Toronto? Is it like people from Chicago talking about people from New York? Like, are they a little shitty about it or?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, oh, really, from Toronto? Or, you know, someone coming back is like, oh, like I'm just here visiting from Toronto, you know?
Right.
It's definitely one of those.
Yeah.
So it's a cool place to be.
Did you feel like a sellout at all? Like leaving, like you're selling out Winnipeg?
Not so much, but will I ever be able to be like, hey, like I'm from Toronto? I don't think so.
Right.
I see a lot of Americans do this when they move to like LA or New York.
I know.
Like, hey, yeah. I'm from New York. I'm from LA or something, but I know you're from the Midwest.
They adopt it really fast.
Really quick. Oh, I don't think that can fly as much here.
Yeah. But it is amazing how quickly somebody's from Brooklyn I'm like, no, no, you're not. Brad's kind of done that, but he's got a couple decades in now. So I think, Brad, have you lived longer in New York than you've lived anywhere else?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. Like by what? Like 40, 50 years now, right?
By like 65 years.
So hold on, Brad, you are the producer of this?
Yeah.
Producer. And then who's Arthur?
Arthur?
Is that a person involved in this?
No.
Not involved in this.
off the track. I was Googling it, going off track.
So
Is an off the track podcast, which I think is about racing.
Going off track with you. Sorry, Jonah. Who's Jonah?
Yeah, so Jonah and Steven and I started this together.
Yeah. Right.
Many moons ago. And Benny was a guest. And then Benny was like, hey, man, I'm not doing anything.
This you with the blonde hair on this picture?
I don't know.
Kind of like,
probably.
I think it is. Nice. I think it is. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
What's your story?
What is your story, Brad?
I've been to Sneaky D's several times. I played there in the 90s, dude.
With who, man?
I was in a band called The Goops. And
I
think the first time we went there was with the Devil Dogs, which was a New York like kind of garage band.
Huh.
It was like the first tour we ever did. That would have been like 94 maybe.
And where are you guys located?
I'm in the Lower East Side of Manhattan.
Nice.
I'm in Jersey. I'm in Central Jersey now. I just moved out of Jersey City by Manhattan and went out to the forest.
Nice.
By forest, he means suburbia.
Yeah, it's the forest to me.
Suburbia with perks. It is a little forest.
Yeah, it was funny. When I moved out here, I'm telling Brad about it, and I'm like, yeah, I have all this wood and stuff here. He's like, oh, dude, just light a giant bonfire. I'm like, dude, I'm in a neighborhood. I'm not like, this isn't fucking rural Maine in the 40s. Like, you grew up, you know?
The way you made it sound, it was like, it's such a city boy going to the suburbs. There's plants here.
There are so many plants. They keep giving me a rash.
A lot of people in Winnipeg right now in the cold got fires going on in their yards.
That's
what they're doing.
I love that.
Right in the city. Loving it.
I learned how to drive from a Canadian. I went up when I was like 19. I was playing some shows with the band Ensign, playing drums for them.
You were in Ensign?
I was in Ensign for a very short time. Most drummers in New Jersey were. It was kind of like a rite of passage to do like,
nice.
I actually just had a conversation with Mikey from the Ergs about how it's a Jersey rite of passage to play drums for Ensign for a while.
Oh, wow. But that's awesome.
I remember I went up and, you know, one of the better things about playing in Ensign when I was 19 was you went to Canada, I could drink and none of those guys drank. So I was in this very unique situation of actually being able to drink and then all the beer being for me, which was pretty great. But then I met a few kids, nice French Canadians, and they offered to, you know, smoke some weed out in their car and we had to go somewhere. And it was like, you know, maybe a foot of snow on the ground. It was like pretty heavy. And these kids start driving. I'm like, is this safe? Blah, blah, blah. And they just start ripping through the snow in a way that I thought was going with reckless abandon. But I learned a very valuable lesson from them, which was they're like, no, 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 never slow down. Woohoo! And they're just like cruising through the snow. And I've taken that all the way to New Jersey, that's the way to drive through the snow. You can't be timid.
Sounds scary.
It sounds
very scary.
It was fun. Actually, I just got that little feeling in the bottom of my stomach when I was telling you that story. Cause I was in a risky situation. But I got out of it, and now I have a funny story to tell. Speaking of which, before I got in touch with George, I was going to plan B, which was going to be a mystery story, okay?
Yeah.
And speaking of being in a precarious situation in a foreign country, I heard about a time you went to jail in Serbia.
I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the thing you were doing is something I've done like 1,000 fucking times. So it kind of made me nervous. Can you tell me what happened?
Of course. So, we're, this is, I don't know what year this would have been, like 2013 or something. So we're in Serbia at a festival called Exit Festival. In Novi Sad. It's a fucking sick festival. It's in a kingdom, whoa, like an old kingdom. And so there's like all these different stages. Like some are like, you know, you're going down a hill and then the wall of the ground of the hill would be like the wall. And then like the stage is like inside of these little nooks and stuff. Like, yeah, it's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Moby and Prodigy and bands like that are the headliners. So I'm watching Fucked Up on the main stage during the day. I get some like hash from one of my friends, and then start. I think I rolled a hash cigarette. You know, tobacco and hash. I go to the reggae tent, try to roll a joint there. You know, but it's like the classic. Like I got like a couple of random like papers. You know, my friend has a cigarette. I got like a tiny bit of hash. Right, right. You know, it's windy outside. I'm like trying to like roll this little like fucking makeshift joint, right?
Yeah.
At the reggae tent, I'm sitting down in a circle and I just hear policia, policia, policia. You know, I'll never forget the feeling of these men's hands on my arms, you know, like, you know, two men holding each arm. Ugh. Like it's very scary.
Yeah.
So they start taking me away. They get the joint, you know, it was like just a pathetic little half roll, you know.
And are they telling you anything in like Serbian or?
No, but like I was hanging out with some people. I can't exactly remember who.
Oh, okay.
But I was like, they're like, don't worry. Like, it's going to be, I'm like, okay. I'm like, what's going to happen? They're like, it'll be okay. It's okay. The police men are saying it's going to be okay. Okay. So okay. Like, oh, so kind of go. And they put me in the car. They kind of, you know, they pat me down and everything, and they kind of rough me up into the car. Not too crazy.
Yeah.
And I had no idea where I was going. Our tour manager at the time, Adam Capps, shout out. He somehow I was able to call or text them.
So they drove off with you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They drove off with you and nobody else, just you.
Just with me, yeah. And then they took me. They said, "Where's your passport?" So they took me to our tour vehicle. I had gotten in touch with our tour manager. He ran back there. It was like a couple miles to get, you know, so, but he, and then they were in, I can't remember exactly what happened because this is quite a while ago. Anyways, I get my passport. I got to go and get my passport from the vehicle. And then they took me to this, like pretty much like it was the drug tank for the festival because it was like a lot of EDM stuff going.
Right.
So they, you know, they were getting a lot of guys like coming in with like Molly and other kinds of drugs.
Right.
Just like right at the gate, you know? So when I got there, it was like kind of like, you know, I did the whole pictures and everything. And, when I got there, it was, just like in a classroom full of just, you know, people that had been busted for drugs,
like a literal classroom, like chalkboard and desks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And they played they played 24-hour Party People.
What? On, like,
yeah. And then this other German movie with David Bowie in it and like this red-haired girl, like German girl that was
okay,
like heroin and stuff. Wow. Can't remember the name of it, but it was like supposed to be, I think, like anti-drug movies.
Yeah.
But
it's like you moved into some like mixture of like an Eli Roth and a Stanley Kubrick movie. This is like bizarre.
But yeah, no. And then I remember they kept me overnight. I was able to like, I asked, hey, can I like sleep on the floor? So they let us sleep on the floor the next day. All of us, you know, people that have gotten caught with drugs. I had literally 0.3 grams of hash.
Oh my God.
So, yeah. So I went, they kind of got us all out and they shoved us into this vehicle that was too small for all of us. Kind of some of us like crouched out, standing and stuff. We all go to the courthouse, await like, you know, to get my court thing. And then they just kind of asked me like, oh, where'd you get it from? Whatever. I know that guys that with a lot less than me got charged less than me, sorry, with a lot more than me,
wow,
like weed or something, got charged less, but maybe I don't know why, you know, they kind of kept on asking me questions. They like made me pay like 400 euro or something. And then I was able to go. And I remember being like, I'm never going to smoke again outside of Canada or like outside. But of course,
that kind of
wears off. I don't want this story to go on too long, but like actually.
No, this is an incredible story.
So we were lucky because we had 2 days off before we were supposed to play this festival.
Oh, okay.
So we're on tour with Defeater. We're just chilling.
Oh, so this was just a chill day too. You were just at this festival straight.
Yeah. Yeah. Luckily we had like 2 days off. Okay. I missed the Prodigy though. That sucks.
Bummer.
But, so we have the chance to play the show, and this is a couple days later. I made it. So I didn't miss any shows, which is very, very lucky.
Yeah.
And then we did the show. It was awesome. And then I remember at one point I see like some cops come security come to the side of the stage. They tried to get cops, but I see security on the side of the stage, and we had like one more song. We do like Wake the Dead usually like towards the end of the set.
Yeah.
And I'm like on the monitor, you know, or like on some sort of platform in my glory. Like we said, you know, and fucking these security guards come up on stage and try to like wave me down. I'm like, whatever, no.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like shooing them off.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everyone like, blah, blah. And everyone's singing it. I'm like, no. And I come down, they're like, please. So I come down and they start like taking me off stage, and I'm like, fuck Exit Festival. Like I say it in the mic. And as I go in the corner, our tour manager there and like some of the other guys in my band, they're like, fuck, we're just fucking with you.
Huh? Oh no.
Yeah. So yeah, they kind of like, I thought that I was going to be in trouble again. And like, they were taking me away again and just fucking with me. So it was pretty funny.
Oh, that's pretty bad. Woo. Oh man.
It was pretty intense. One more little tidbit. Yeah. I was there going through with Comeback Kid a couple years ago, and we had a driver from Serbia, and we decided to get him because, you know, we're going through Eastern Europe and he'd be good at, you know, we're in a van,
sure,
and, you know, to talk to the border guards.
Definitely.
He was kind of like joking around with the border guards when we were going through Serbia, and they like ended up like going through everything of ours. Like,
really?
Like they went through our whole thing. Like, they're like, yeah, this guy, like, you know, he's like, oh, this guy got, you know, arrested or what. And they're like, why'd you get arrested? And I had to tell. So I don't know why or whose fault it was, but we definitely got our whole van like checked and, you know, all our you know, bags kind of undone and everything this last time we were there.
So much for getting the Serbian driver, huh?
But it was funny. Last time, you know, when I was in the court, I said, can I come back to Serbia? They said yes. So I knew, and I've been back a few times, and it's kind of a special story. I don't know. It's kind of nice.
Well, it's a special, you always got to come back now after that. You're going to get a statue definitely there.
There is a Comeback Kid monument there, or not very big, but someone did do like a nice big mural for us. So,
oh really, in Serbia?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. It's kind of cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you mentioned Wake the Dead. You know, a song of note, as you know, by you. Now, to me, I deem this one of the like 10 most classic hardcore anthems of all time. You know, there's a small list to me of like hardcore songs that are proper anthems, you know, and this is one of them. Like, do you remember what the process of writing that song was, like where the initial ideas came from? And when you all were finished with that song, did you know it was a special one? Did you know it was the highlight of that record, or did that take a while to kind of surface?
I think that was pretty obvious for us that it was like the title track, at least.
Right.
Scott had the idea Wake the Dead, our old singer. Okay. I used to play guitar and come back in.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember writing the lyrics for that song with him in the kitchen of the Blasting Room, Bill Stevenson and Jason Livermore studio, where we recorded that. We recorded that record in 2 weeks. It was so awesome. We had met those guys when Bill was playing in Only Crime.
Oh, cool.
And, he even like, you know, the Bane guys, I think, introduced us, and he even put together like a compilation CD of stuff he'd done to like,
Bill send you a compilation of what kind of stuff?
Just of stuff that he'd done, like other records that he'd, because, you know, I knew that he had, you know, was from Descendants and Black Flag and stuff, and I know he'd done all these great records, but more in like the pop punk world. So
right,
I just wanted to see, you know, I think one of the songs that was standout there was, he had some stuff that was a little harder edged.
Right. So he was just trying to prove like he could do a heavier record to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. So yeah. And it worked out really well.
Yeah. No shit.
And a couple funny things about Wake the Dead. We weren't sure that there was going to be like singing on it.
Oh, okay.
So Scott, like the first, outro like thing, you know, it's a kind of group sing along that was all intentional, but Scott would kind of, just kind of shout the lyrics more instead of, he wouldn't really sing.
Right. Right.
But the chorus of Wake the Dead is kind of a version of it. And actually Bill used, this like analog tuning thing. It's like a wheel.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you've ever heard of these things before, but it's like old school, but it's before, you know, any kind of auto tune.
Yeah.
But I think he kind of like adjusted some of Scott's shout in that first chorus with this time was gonna be different.
Yeah.
You know, just he may have adjusted it quite subtly on the wheel, which is such a cool little thing that I think.
Yeah.
To kind of give that a little bit, that chorus a little bit more melody.
Cool.
And then you know, Scott and us, we did second guess the outro sing along. We were like, is this too melodic? You know,
right.
We definitely had that conversation, but
the hardcore guilt.
Yeah. The hardcore guilt. Yeah. And then, you know, we decided to do it. Then Jeremy said to add the harmony, and then it was, you know, we're on our way to, you know, Empiricon Festival or something.
Right. Like that, right. So. And when you guys started playing that song live, was it again, like an automatic kind of just like, all right, this one's a little different.
Yeah.
This one's that was on.
It really, that one was on this like Victory sampler.
Right.
And they put us first on it. You know, that was the song right away. And we knew it already because we went on tour in Australia and the song maybe had just come out.
Okay.
The record wasn't out yet, but the first time we ever played it, I remember, was in Melbourne or something like that. And it was just, like, we didn't know if we would play it or not. And then it went off. I guess it was just on that sampler, but somehow, you know, people had it already. That's why we weren't really sure. We hadn't even been playing it on that tour.
Right.
And then, yeah, shortly after that, we did a tour with Bane, I think, when it came out. And that was like really the first like time we're like with Wake the Dead. We're like, okay, wow. We're like in a band here. Like people give a fuck about. So.
Were you full time prior to that? You were already kind of going for it full time, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah,
for sure. So, we kind of kept on going from there. I don't know, maybe Figure Four it stopped, because that was the band me and Jeremy were doing before that.
Yeah.
We kind of stopped around 2004, you know. And then when Comeback Kid's first record came out, it was both bands touring, and then that kind of stopped pretty much when Wake the Dead came out.
Gotcha. Now, like, speaking of writing that song, what's like the recipe for a great hardcore song? Like, what needs in a great hardcore song to make it a great hardcore song?
I've been trying to figure that out this whole writing session, yeah. Man. It depends, I guess. What kind of hardcore are you trying to write?
Well, I guess for you, you know, for Comeback Kid hardcore, like what's something that, you know, say for instance, you know, you're truly a band who understands speed, right? You know, like,
yes, energy is one thing we have to keep in our minds. We don't want to lose that, the energy, right? Speed is something like fast songs. And octaves are things that I don't always want to bring to the table because there's so many of those coming from other members.
Right. Oh, so I see. Yeah.
I'm just trying to write something a little different here, you know, like something a little slower, slow down the BPM, you know, like, right. And octaves, we have a funny joke about octaves because I was like, no, not more octaves, you know, but we've built a career on octaves, you know, so.
Gotta give the people what they want.
What is the perfect heart? Like, I don't know. What's the formula?
I mean, well, it's got something to do with the peaks and valleys, you know, like what, you
apparently
know,
it doesn't need a breakdown. Like apparently, because there's not always, we don't
know. It doesn't need a breakdown, but it needs a drastic change of pace, right? So, you know, Comeback Kid can get away from being really fucking fast to going into a two-step, and you don't need a breakdown because you have that change of pace there for you waiting.
Yeah.
You know, but like from the Hatebreed school, you know, it's like, it's, you know, they're like the closest to Led Zeppelin Peaks and Valleys, you know, that concept where like in every Hatebreed song, you know, for the most part, you're going to get this build up and this release of tension into a breakdown.
A build up and release is essential in a great hardcore song, right? I think that's a great thing to know.
See, I think that's good what job. It is. Yeah. So you don't need a breakdown, but you need a build up and release. It's very sexual, Andrew.
Yes. And you know, unless it's like a really fast first chorus, I'm noticing just for us, I don't really want to be fast if the first verse and first chorus is already fast.
Right.
The second verse fast, I'm going from like, again, like from a singer's perspective. So, you know, we were talking earlier about with hardcore and stuff, heavy music, it's all about the crowd. So by the time the second verse comes around, if you've already had like a minute and a bit fast, you're going to need to change it up.
Yes.
By then.
Yes.
For sure.
It gets too relentless. Sure. Yeah.
Totally. I mean, not always, like if you're listening to Razor or some thrash stuff, you know.
Well, yeah, but if you're going to keep it that fast and relentless, you got to put what? 2 minutes tops for the song.
Yeah, I'm stoked. We're keeping this new record, all the songs like under 2:30 mostly.
Oh.
And I'm really happy about that because there's been records in our past, some that I don't like, some that I like, but there's been times when we're like, fuck, like really trying to keep it under 3:30, but some of these songs are really going long. Yeah. Maybe we have a really long bridge or intro that's really keeping it long.
Yeah.
But we're very aware.
Well, you guys, you're one of the few bands that I love. You know, I practice drums by playing along to other people's music. That's always just how I've practiced. And
nice.
And I love Comeback Kid, and I can't always play along to some of the songs I like because some of them are just too fast. You're one of like three bands I truly love that I don't always love playing drums to because it's like a fucking workout. I just can't do it.
There's many, many different kick patterns, right? But one that we will never do is, I don't want that.
Oh, well, that's the punk one, right?
That's not cool for me. That, like, especially with a double kick.
Oh,
that's such a fake beat.
Oh, get out of here with that. Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's making me cringe. It's one of the ugliest beats.
It's funny. Yeah. I've had times when we had my buddy Jesse, who played drums with us for a little while, come to a show. And he's like, I heard some of that fake fast beat. I was like, I'll make sure it never happens again.
Yeah. Well, I remember that was part of my stint in Ensign, was like, I had to do cheater beats every once in a while to just get through it. You know, it's like, fuck.
Totally.
I did it live. I've played a cheater beat live. I'm.
And now, you know, we're like programming all the drums in,
right?
You know, so there's that. And then luckily we got we were jamming with an electronic drum kit. Our drummer Lauren was using that. So we were able to kind of plug that in and kind of just edit and just really kind of now zero in on what's going to actually be happening before we go in. It's like, so it's going to be so cool just to kind of know that we're documenting music instead of kind of like writing on the spot, which we've done so many times before.
Oh, I see. So this is giving you an interesting entry into this record, kind of unique.
Definitely. It's a kind of new way. I mean, we're just forced into this new way of, you know, we're jamming and then three of us are on different computers working on different parts for the same kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's great.
I wanted to ask your insight on something that, you know, I've never had personal experience with, but know some bands who have, you know, explain to people who don't know, like, the upsides to releasing your music like via Canadian labels and like the things you would lose if you didn't release through a Canadian label.
You want me to talk about funding?
I mean, I'm curious. It's really something like, basically, I guess the question is like, if you decided to do a full deal with any of these labels where they're like, okay, you get US, Canada, Europe, you get all of them, what do you lose from Canada if you decided to do that?
If you feel inclined to apply for grants,
right,
you can, most of them, you don't want, you wouldn't be able to be on an American label or have Americans own your masters in Canada. Mm. So we've always kept ourselves, you know, you would see us right now, we're on Nuclear Blast. So we're on Nuclear Blast everywhere except for Canada.
Right.
And Dine Alone New Damage, was doing our records there. And this next one, we'll see what happens here with that. We'll have them involved as well. But for some reason, when you apply for any kind of grant thing, they want you, as a touring album, anything, they want it to be owned in Canada. So right. That's why we'll always kind of have, you know, in the past, it was, you know, Victory all over the world except for Canada. That's why you'll see a lot of Canadian bands with two labels.
Yes.
As opposed to just one.
Right, right.
So that's kind of the main thing. They just, it's just one of the things that the grant companies want. Hmm. So,
and
ideally, ideally they want all the money to be spent by the band. And then
I see,
because it's, right. it's, you know, when you're trying to access money, you also have to spend that money first.
I see. Yeah,
and they only reimburse us a portion of it. You know, so it's up to you to kind of find a lot of that extra little bit.
All right. So one thing, we didn't talk about Sights and Sounds much. Sorry, we didn't get into it too much. But I was wondering, you know, like really when you're writing for Sights and Sounds, like, do you feel like if you didn't have that outlet, you would need that secondary outlet away from Comeback Kid so that type of music doesn't wind up in Comeback Kid?
Totally.
Yeah.
I actually had a song that I thought was great for Comeback Kid recently, and the guys were just kind of like, sounds like a, you know, a bar, a second, like a B-side Sights and Sounds song, a little bit heavier. So I always kind of like, you know, anytime something really like melodic creeps in, I'll be like, let me guess, you're going to think it's like Sights and Sounds, eh? It's, you know, it's me singing, so it's going to sound something like, you know, of that. But no, you definitely need to, I don't mind having the idea of having another outlet. Comeback Kid, luckily I've had, you know, if it was just me this whole time,
yeah,
we probably would have gone like a lot of different directions. So luckily
you would have pulled a full cave in by now.
Who knows, right? I may have had not had the self-awareness, especially like, you know, after broadcasting, like I think that record sucks.
That's your Oh, is that the second? That was, is that the sophomore slump?
That's the proggy sophomore slump of that. Yeah.
No, I know the record. I mean, I like it. But yeah.
Yeah, kind of funny, but yeah, you know, I could have probably gone in a lot of different directions if it was just me. And I'm lucky to have like Jeremy and some of the other guys.
So you think after like broadcasting, you would have jumped the shark?
Who knows, man? There's some questionable things going on. So it's definitely good. And then, you know, it starts Sights and Sounds, kind of has a more like epic, like rock,
yes,
you know, soundscapey kind of feel. It's good, you know, to have a thing like that, to be able to work with a producer like Devin Townsend, or, sure, you know, play with pads and keys and just sing, you know, whereas that, again, what is that? The hardcore guilt you were saying?
Yes.
Every time I sing a melody, I feel guilt. So
Lou Kohler is yelling at me in my brain every time I sing a melody.
Yeah. So, and you know, so you just got to kind of ride that fine line with that. But, and even now it's like, I don't know really what Sights and Sounds will ever do after this pandemic, because, you know, it was hard enough before,
right,
that, and who knows now, but even that band kind of put itself into a corner. I think, you know, we have to write. So, you know, I'll write other songs. I'm like, oh, well, it's not really Sights or not really Comeback Kid. What's it going to be? You know, so it might be time for something new as well.
Oh,
so
there you go. That's fun. Now, when you're in a band with your brother, are drummer jokes banned?
Are drummer jokes just mostly dad jokes, though?
I mean, they're akin to dad jokes in the way that they're all horrible. But yeah, I think they're pretty close to dad jokes.
Yeah. See, well, yeah. So I don't know how often they come out here, but
that's good.
What you got?
No, I was just asking. I hate drummer jokes. I'm not a fan. I was asking if you, when you're in a band with your brother, are you not allowed to use them anymore? Like, can you use drummer jokes on your own brother, or is it just wrong?
Of course.
Is it just like,
no, we can bust each other's balls pretty good. We can get quite heated with each other and then it'll simmer very quick.
Yeah.
There'll be like a lot of yelling,
sure.
You know, if we're ever so inclined or hungover or something like that.
Yeah. Brother
style. I think that's the one thing though, like about just being sober, and is just a lot more grace, you know, especially with writing, and just, you know, there's just, it's not as big a deal.
Right, so right.
That's one thing I'm finding.
Huh. Now, where do you think that comes from, out of curiosity? Now, this is not coming from a weird place, because I'm also someone who is always going back and forth in sorts of these sorts of push and pulls with substances. So, like, so I'm really curious, like, what do you mean by like the grace? Like, what is it when you're in that situation, what is the feeling you get? Is it like you're less confident about yourself and your own situation? It makes you react to other people worse, or?
I don't know. I think just being able just to be just very present and be confident in your ideas, you know what you're talking about. Sometimes I think if you're kind of coming off a night, or, you know, maybe a light bender, or a continuous drinking stint, you just end up second guessing your ideas and your thoughts a little bit more, and maybe aren't as articulate when you're coming across two people, you know. So this has been just a really, really positive time for me to, like, and it's kind of opened my eyes to that. I'm not saying that I'm like sober guy now, but you know. It's a little bit of an endorphin thing to be able to, like, this is what I'm doing. It feels good, you know. You release some endorphins that way, and you release endorphins when you write a song and can play it for someone. You know, it's these just little things that kind of feel good, you know.
Yeah, totally. It's interesting. All right, this is what I want to finish on, because I think I stumbled across something that could be really advantageous to you, okay? And this is from someone who's just seen a lot of singers and seen a lot of people fuck with their voices. So I read that your vocal process on tour is to blow out your voice as soon as possible, then recover, and then you're good for the rest of the tour.
If I don't blow my voice, then that's a good thing. But if I do, I know that it's because it's like show 3 or 4.
So I'm reading this, and my first thing in my head is like, there's got to be a better way, man, you know, than doing it like that. And now you have this window of opportunity where you're not touring, where I think, you know, maybe you could figure out another way to do it. I just don't want you to lose your voice, Andrew. I don't want you to get polyps. I don't want you to get one of those weird surgeries like when you turn 40. So I'm trying to help you here. You have a window.
The only way to give me help is so I could hear my vocals. Just turn those monitors up. And for, you know, maybe for another band, I would get in-ear monitors, but I'm not going to get in-ears, because I don't want to be that guy with, you know, front man always fucking with my ear because I'm so sweaty.
Yeah.
You know, as long as I can hear myself, I'm good. It always happens at those shows where, like, there's literally like no monitors or you can't hear it. The guitars are so loud. And I just push too hard.
Yeah.
That's, time. But have you seen like me with like no voice kind of thing?
No, I'm just, as a fan of your band, I'm just concerned for you, and I think it's worked
pretty well for me so far.
Okay, this is your process. I don't want to mess with the process.
So you're just judging this on things you've read, or what is this coming
well listen
from?
Andrew, we've hung out a couple times, but most of what I know about you is what I've researched on the internet.
So
that is where this came from.
Yeah, I don't have any, like, you know, warm up techniques. I kind of do, but like sometimes. But really, no, it's just really going with the flow. All it is is you just kind of got to dust it off at the beginning. If you're not doing it for a while, you gotta get it into shape at the beginning. And especially because, you know, we don't really rehearse before tours a lot. So, you know, it's meeting the guys after having 2 months off and then, okay, my first time really singing is going to be Soundcheck or that show. And then you kind of give it your all. Maybe it's like 70% at show 2 and 3, and then 4, 5, 6, that's when it really ramps up and like you're able to kind of sustain.
Right. What's the trick when that happens? Just getting the mic out into the crowd a little more?
Just being able to hear yourself and just, again, just having that, just a little bit of couple shows to warm up. You know?
Well, there's a reason that every singer you've seen with inner ear monitors has one hanging out of their ear, usually about halfway through the show. I think your instinct is right. I bailed on those things. We had them for a while and I'm done. Don't.
Really? Yeah. I have, you know, I've had people be like, why don't you do that? But yeah, it's just, I already have my AirPods like falling out or, you know, it's just, I know that I'm too clumsy for it.
To me, it's about, unless you have like some fucking team, like a technical team and things like that, you know, for bands like us, man, it's all about just reducing variables, you know,
totally.
And you start bringing inner ear monitors and inner ears into the mix. You're just giving yourself a high probability for issues, you know? Keep it simple, baby.
Right?
Keep it simple.
Yeah, I like to hear the lot. I want to hear the air. You know, I want to hear the people.
That's it.
So
you're a man of the people, Andrew. Well, yo,
trying to be.
Thanks for taking 90 minutes on a Tuesday and speaking with us.
Thanks so much for having me, man.
I love your music, and I hope one day we can share a vodka soda again.
I hope so too.
All right. Yeah, thanks, man.
All right, I'll see you guys soon.
Thanks. All right.
Wow. That was intense.
Oh, Canada.
Oh, Canada. I had one of the best mystery friends ever.
That was a good one, dude.
Yeah. That was fun.
Good job.
He's awesome.
Yeah, super nice.
I tried to dig into the past. I saw that in some other interviews. Once he started getting into the past, it was a little, he didn't get as much, you know?
Yeah.
And I tried to. And I also didn't get much.
You know,
maybe one day I'll get better at this David Letterman style. You know, we'll really get into it with people. But yeah, come at that thing I was talking about. It just happened the other day. I was playing Wake the Dead on drums. It's so much fun. I'm in the chorus. I'm in the verse. Then it gets to the bridge with this fucking snare fill. And I just can't play it. It's too fast. It's too fast. It's crazy. And then I just bail.
It's not all about speed.
And then I just put on an ISIS record again, you know? But I do thank Andrew for coming on to do this. If you want to tweet at Comeback Kid, it's at CBK Tweets. Instagram, they're comebackkid_hardcore HC. New record coming, which is cool. Looks like 2021, we'll get a new Comeback Kid record. Excited about that.
It sounds like it'll be a good one. It's got some, it's gonna have a lot of songs on it, right?
Yeah. He said that in one interview. He's like, I got 10 demos in a day. I'm like, woo, goodness gracious. And that was a fun one. So what about our situation? Are you gonna post these pictures of your ridiculous wristbands on our Patreon?
I'll put them somewhere.
So these are the things you get with our Patreon if you join. I make fun of Brad's tiny little hands. Whatever I'm looking at right now, these are your kids' hands.
I do give some peeks into our backstage shenanigans sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll post them on Patreon. If you want to be a patron, you can go to patreon.com/goingofftrack. You have a few different options there. Thank you to our loyal patrons. Also, thank you to Tim and Gentleman Jim, who have exceeded on the Venmo tip this week.
Gentleman Jim Norton coming with a tip.
Jim,
I feel like we just got the singer from Crucial Youth giving us a tip. I feel like that that goes, I mean, that gives you some cred, doesn't it?
For real? Yo, I mean, these people, you know, they've done enough for us. They don't need to more than happy to have them as listeners, but thanks both of you and anybody else who is interested in just throwing us a little something. It's venmo.com/offtrack. You know, a buck is fine. You don't have to be a big spender like these cool guys.
Or you can. It's fine. I got this fancy new equipment now. I got a real microphone.
Let us know how Benny sounds. He's got a
new
rig.
Do I sound better? Do I sound like Teddy Pendergrass?
He sounds better to me, but I haven't.
Because that's what I'm going for.
You can do that now, see, with your pop filter.
Hey, Brad, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to go off track in our outro. Okay. How do you like that?
It's a good place for it.
Did you have chestnut trees growing up?
We did, but I don't know that we did anything about it. Like, what? We didn't harvest chestnuts, but I remember throwing them at people.
I'm surprised you had them, because I just learned that almost every chestnut tree in America was killed.
What?
In like the 40s or something like that, by some like disease that killed chestnut trees.
Well, yeah, that's when I was a kid, in the 30s.
Yeah.
Didn't we establish that already?
So that's why you see like chestnuts roasting by the open fire, but you don't often see chestnuts.
No, man. I mean, I see chestnut trees all the time. Aren't chestnuts those, like, they're those nuts that are like, they look like a fucking COVID-19 cell. Like, they're spiky. Isn't that a chestnut? Right.
I have to do some now because I'm nervous.
Are you going to look in the, you gonna look it up? Chestnut. Nut.
No, okay. I'm right. Yeah, okay. I'm right. So this wasn't bullshit. So I'm reading a book called The Overstory, right, by Richard Powers.
Right, but we had these chestnuts, and I've seen them since, like maybe at my dad's when I was home, or I don't know. But I've seen chestnut seeds, and yeah, I've even split them open and like showed the kids. I don't think I've ever like harvested them and cooked them though.
Okay, so I'm right, and I'm glad I'm right.
You're
so
right,
I'm
reading that they all died.
Yeah, I'm reading a book that I knew it was fiction, but based in reality. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. I'm like, I just made an argument on a fictional book. But no, it did actually happen. So basically, the American chestnut tree survived for like 40 million years. Then it disappeared within 40.
Oy.
And it was because of like, a beetle or a disease or
from
one of those
China.
Things. I do think it was. It was
of course it was.
It was a fungus that killed the trees.
From China.
And then, you know, because all the forests were disappearing so fast, the Forest Service was like, any ones that are healthy, just cut down and use the wood before they die.
Oh God.
And that's where the answer to saving them was in the healthy trees. And then within 40 years, like there was this like huge economy based around chestnut trees that just died.
Oh, maybe it's so these, the horse chestnut are the ones that I think I've seen that look familiar. Definitely threw these at my brother when I was a kid. They're scary looking. I don't know if that's the same as the whatever. Doesn't matter.
I'm not sure.
This podcast is long enough.
Yeah, this went out.
But thanks
to
the three people who are still listening.
God bless you.
Hey, if you're still listening, obviously you care about horse chestnuts. So.
Yeah, we're out. Listen, I love you all. I love you, Brad.
Love you, Benny.
I hope you have a great week. Send my best to the family.
Same, best
to the Going Off Track family. And we'll see you with a wonderful guest next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.